News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
You got that right. It's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on a Friday, TGIF. Dr. Bill's regionally semi-famous weather scale up. A dismal number today.
Yeah, 1.6730.
Jeez,
come on.
That was like the final score with BYU and Navy.
Yeah,
you couldn't even look at it.
And Dan, you know, 3 weeks in, let me tell you, there's going to be much worse numbers than that, but also much better numbers as we get closer to fall.
Good. 7 after 8, Dan Brennan, Dalton Arwig, and Mobile Mardi Gras balls, they're on for this coming carnival season, but with a number of precautions. And Mary Lee Gay is the ASM Global Senior Marketing Manager. Mary Lee, I've known you for years. I'm very proud of that title. I don't know what it means.
It's just a lot of words. It's just a lot of words that they handle whatever you need to handle.
Gotcha. Well, in any event, you got in touch with us quickly yesterday as Dalton and I were talking with Rob Hulbert, and he was breaking the story in our Lanyap conversation about what you all are doing this Mardi Gras season, because it was actually, I guess, a press release from you all to the organizations. Or let us know what Mardi Gras is going to look like this year per your organization.
Yeah, so we sent out on September 9th, I'm losing track of my days here, Wednesday, a letter to all of the organizations that host events at the Civic Center as well as the Convention Center. And we have about 13 organizations that have events at the Civic Center and 7 that have Convention Center events.
Mm-hmm.
So what we wanted to do was just give them a very general idea of what they could expect coming up. And that's hard to do because, you know, Dan, I know you've been involved with the organizations in some years with being an MC, mm-hmm. and everybody does things a little bit differently.
Right.
Or a lot differently.
Yes.
Depending on the size and what parts of the buildings they're using. So this was just basically a starting point to try to say, hey, if things are exactly as they are today with the restrictions that the state of Alabama has put on us with, you know, 50% occupancy, mm-hmm. and the masks and all that, this is what it's going to look like. We certainly don't think that this is a hard and fast, this is definitely what it's going to look like. It's just, here's kind of what we're thinking might be the case, but really what we want to do is meet with you. We've got some ideas that we've been working on. We know you've got ideas, and if we can all get to the table and talk about these ideas, maybe come up with some additional ones and figure out how we can execute those, we really want to do that and ensure that we're able to host these events if you want to have them. And that's really the purpose. It's kind of hard to get bogged down in the numbers a little bit, but it's really, I think the big takeaway is we want to have these events. We hope that the organizations will be able to adjust a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and we'll work with them to do that, and that we can all have something to look forward to, because Lord knows we all need it right
now.
Now, Mary Lee, we've been fighting this virus now for, I want to say, 7-8 months, so it's been a while, and thankfully we were able to finish the 2020 Mardi Gras before everything shut down. But I'm wondering, how long have these discussions been going on with ASM Global? And obviously right now we're in the beginning of September, so a good 3-4 months before parading season starts. Things are subject to change, I'm sure. You just said these aren't hard and fast rules for sure. So when did these discussions start? And has there been much discussion with the city of Mobile as well?
Well, it's hard to, I mean, you know, everything kind of stopped for us around March 13th, and our industry was the first to shut down, and we'll probably be one of the last to get back to normal, whatever normal looks like in the future. But, no, I wouldn't say that they started off immediately, because I don't think any of us really thought that we'd be at this point.
Right.
And, we didn't realize it would be so long. But once we kind of got into the summer months and you got the announcement about the schools closing, which thankfully they're reopening, and, you know, things didn't seem to be getting better, I think that's when we started to get some concerns from the organizations themselves, as well as our team, trying to figure out, hey, are we going to be able to do this? As far as talking with the mayor, we're constantly talking with his office. His team is very important to what we do, because the city of Mobile is the one that owns all of our buildings that we manage, so we work for them. So, you know, we've been trying to kind of talk with the organizations, collect some of their concerns, and get that information to the mayor. But I think after Kay Ivey made the last update to the Safer at Home, which extended it through October 2nd, he felt like he needed to kind of come out and make a statement. And, you know, part of that was parades, and I certainly don't feel like I would feel comfortable with making any decisions on parades
right
at this point, so I can't imagine he would. But, you know, we did talk with him and his team and gave them some of the challenges that we felt like we were facing, but also the ways that we felt like we could overcome those.
Let me just reset for those who just are checking in right now. Mary Lee Gay is the ASM Global Senior Marketing Manager, and ASM, among the venues that they oversee, the Convention Center and the Civic Center, both in downtown Mobile, which play a huge role in Mobile Mardi Gras. You can continue, Mary Lee.
Sure. And we also manage the Sanger Theater, but, you know, we don't do any Mardi Gras events there. So, but, you know, we've been working with the mayor's office. We've also been working extensively with the Mobile County Health Department, who has been just phenomenal in helping us to figure out how we can do this. And they're, I mean, we've felt very supported by them, as well as the mayor's office. And, you know, I think they both feel like we've got some plans in place that we can do this safely, and as long as everybody understands that it's going to have to be just, you know, a little bit different.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to minimize the impact to the events, because we don't want everything to be totally different, but we're going to do the best we can to make it as close to normal as possible.
Dalton, and again, some of the more notable changes this year at this point: reduced occupancy, 50% occupancy, and so much of this, unfortunately, we've gotten used to here in our area.
Yeah,
social distancing.
That's the thing, is the reduced occupancy and social distancing and face coverings, temperature checks, those things are what we'll be doing for all of our upcoming events at all three of our buildings.
And, of course, deep cleaning and the hand sanitizer stations. And I guess so that you guys can make sure these rooms are clean for whatever the next ball may be, shutting things down a little early. 1 a.m. would be when most people have to be out the door.
Yeah, so normally things shut down at 2 o'clock because we have, you know, we have an event pretty much every day during Mardi Gras season, and an event ends at 2 o'clock, and we have to turn the building around in time for the next group to come in at 8 o'clock in the morning to start setting up. So, you know, we figured out that we were going to have a little extra time because there's so many additional cleaning measures that we'll be doing in between events that we just needed a little bit of extra time to make sure that we could do that and still be prepared for the next group to come in.
Dalton?
And last question for me, Mary Lee. I know with that reduced occupancy, and I know your hands are tied with the orders from the state, but some of these balls have... tons of people that show up. I know yesterday we got a text from one person who said the MOTs, they average over 5,000 people at the ball. But with that 50% capacity, that's going to change things quite a bit. Is there a hard and fast number, or I guess it depends on which room you're holding those balls?
Well, so that's part of what we're wanting to meet with them about is because, and I know y'all were talking a lot about the capacity of 550 in the arena yesterday, and I wanted to talk a little bit about those numbers. The arena capacity numbers that were listed, which is seating capacity of 550, upper bowl limit of 1,050, so a total of about 1,600. That is specifically for the tableau part
okay.
of the ball.
Got it.
So that's not, you know, you can only have 1,600 in the building for the entire thing. That's just in the arena for the tableau, which if you're not familiar with Mardi Gras, that's what happens at the beginning of the ball right after the parade. So that's just a number if we set things up like we have in the past. So that could change. You know,
okay.
We could get with the Mardi Gras organizations and they say, well, we don't want to have as much floor seating, and then we can make the dance floor bigger. So, you know, there's a lot of options that are, you know, we've just got to figure out. But also, you know, we have Expo Hall. Some of the organizations have used Expo Hall before, and they've used it for a variety of purposes. So depending on what they need it for, we can work with the capacity there. But we're also talking about new things, like perhaps using, you know, we've got the theater. We've got dressing rooms in the theater. That could be used so that we could use what is normally used for dressing rooms in a different capacity. We could maybe have food in the theater lobby, and additional bars, because that's important.
I agree with that. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that really got my attention.
Yes,
Mary Lee.
Don't worry. We're going to have plenty of room for the bars. We'll make sure.
You've got some virtual schooling that's going to go on, and I know that. Where can folks find out more information about this? Is there a website, or is there anywhere that they can kind of get the? And I know this is really just a discussion starter, is what you're explaining to us, and things are kind of fluid. But where could organizations get more information about all this?
We're going to be reaching out to the organizations to set up meetings. We want to have meetings with every organization individually. We want to, you know, talk to them about some of our ideas. We know they've got great ideas. They know their balls better than anybody else. I mean, these are their events, and they've done them for years. So we know that they've got ideas. And we've already talked to them a little bit, but we want to, you know, get to the table, get the ideas out, and figure out how we can execute those so that we can make this happen successfully, but most importantly, safely.
Mary Lee Gay, ASM Global Senior Marketing Manager. We appreciate her time this morning. And again, I think basically a discussion starter is what this is all about, Dalton.
So, no doubt. And things subject to change, obviously. We don't know where we'll be in 4 months.
821, where were we 19 years ago? That's on the way. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5 at 8:25 on this September the 11th. So, 19
years ago.
And when the first plane struck the Twin Towers, at that time, the radio station I was with, we were affiliated with NBC 15, so we had the Today Show on.
Yeah, oh, okay.
So the Today Show was on in the, just like here, up in the corner of the studio. And, you know, we could occasionally kind of look up and see it, but we were more focused on what we were doing on the radio, obviously. But then there was the image. I didn't see the plane. No one saw it live on TV, the first one. Second one, yes. But when the first plane hit, that was stunning, and everybody trying to figure out, and turn that up real quick. Let's see what's going on.
Seemed like an accident.
Seemed like that's what they were calling it, an accident. And they're calling it a small plane, too. And then there was some rumblings. It might have been an airliner. And then the second plane hit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much on live TV because the camera was fixed on where the first plane had hit.
Right.
Devastating, devastating day. And not only that, Dalton, it was like what I remember feeling when this happened was, what's next? If they can do that, it wasn't like an event and that's it. Well, heavens, if they can do that, what else? And obviously the Pentagon then and what happened in Shanksville. But the feeling stayed with us a long time. What's next?
Yeah, very long time. And, of course, that led to the war in Afghanistan and then still in the Middle East to this day. And I remember, you know, this was before social media where rumors truly run rampant nowadays. But I know even back then there was all kinds of rumors. And I know didn't they ground every plane or they tried their best to ground every plane that was in the sky?
Yep.
Now, that year, I was 9 years old going on 10. And I know a lot of children around the nation actually watched as this was happening in school earlier that morning.
Yeah.
I didn't find out about this until leaving Pee-wee football practice at the end of the day.
My dad
came to pick me up and he said, I don't know if you guys have talked about it here, but you know, there's been terrorist attacks and four planes have gone down, three have gone into buildings and one in Pennsylvania. And I remember the anger that he had that day. And I think that was felt nationwide. Who would do this? Who would do this to Americans that are just trying to work and live their everyday jobs? And then I was actually leaving football practice, fifth grade. I remember it pretty clearly. And then what all that led to and the ongoing war that started after that. But what a crazy, crazy day in American history. And
really
kind of
was.
Just like days in the past, whether it's the moon landing or Challenger explosion or Elvis dying, it's one of those days where you truly remember where you were when you heard the news.
It was our generation's Pearl Harbor. Someone said that earlier today on the radio, I think on Gordon Deal's show, and it really was. And I remember picking up my young boy from school, and we had to go to the grocery store right after that. And I just remember talking to him on the way from the car into the grocery store. And I was just explaining to him. And he wasn't a kid that misbehaved much anyway. But I was just like, this is not the day to cause any ruckus. Because this is a very bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody you see in the store today and everybody you're going to run into, we're having a terrible day in America. And something terrible has happened, and then I went on to explain more to him. But
and that day led to so many of our young Americans joining the service and deciding to fight for their country.
Our oldest boy, that was his motivation.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, and
wow.
Of course he's still in today with Special Forces at pretty much the highest level.
Now, locally yesterday, MPD held their memorial service at Mobile Memorial Gardens, and lots going on nationwide. I know Vice President Pence speaking at the Tunnel to Towers event in New York City. Biden will be there in New York City, and then both Vice President Biden, the presidential candidate, and President Donald Trump will be speaking there in Shanksville at a service there in Pennsylvania.
Coronavirus relief, is it coming? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. We'll
talk about that on the way on FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig, good morning.
8:36. FM Talk 106.5, you're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on a Friday. Congratulations, everybody. We made it to the end of another week.
Congratulations to me.
This segment brought to you by our good friends over at McConnell Automotive. And I got to encourage you, first off, visit the lot if possible, because they've got great folks over there at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65. But if you're sitting in work and trying to, you know, end this work day a little bit early and you got a little extra time on your hands, why don't you check out McConnellAutomotive.com. Maybe, I would say, one of the most responsive auto websites I've ever visited, because you can do just about everything right there at McConnellAutomotive.com. You can even buy an entire vehicle and have it delivered. All you have to do is click Start Buying Process right there on McConnellAutomotive.com. But they've got the newest in Buicks and GMCs right there, and The one thing I've been keeping my eye on, actually a couple things, these new AT4 trucks that they've been putting out for the last couple years are just so awesome looking. I mean, they are the baddest things on the road. And then you add in these 2021 Yukons that are just now being delivered to lots, and they're going to have a 2021 Yukon AT4 as well, if I heard Louis correctly yesterday. So they've got some of the best and coolest looking new vehicles online. You can check out the interior and exterior of every vehicle on the lot. And also, in addition to the new vehicles, they have a huge selection of used vehicles, and they've got those cleaned, and they look awesome, and you can drive them right off the lot as early as today with some great prices. So check out McConnellAutomotive.com. Also check out the body shop if you need some work done on your vehicle, and they will just straight up buy your car. If you're not interested in trading, and you just want to get rid of it and get a little cash in your pocket, just give them a call there at McConnell Automotive, and give them the VIN number and how many miles you have, and they'll take care of you. You can call them 251-545-3780 or visit them online, McConnellAutomotive.com. You'll find them east of I-65 on Dauphin Street. That's McConnell Automotive.
It is 8:38 on FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. And so you probably know by now that the Senate Democrats scuttled that scaled-back GOP coronavirus rescue package. That happened just yesterday, mm-hmm. and the parties argued to a standstill over the size and the scope, and it was mostly a party-line vote. It's sort of a dead-end street, and very unfortunate, said Senator Pat Roberts. He's a Republican from Kansas, but it is what it is what he says. And so that means that we're waiting, well, a lot of you are desperately waiting on some help from the government, which we assumed we were getting again. We got it the first time. Mm-hmm. Most of us received some money in April, and it's not like things have gotten dramatically way better.
Yeah, it's not easier for folks out there.
No.
Actually, if anything, it's gotten less so, as some of that loan money has kind of run out, and the stimulus money that was certainly a shot into the arm of the economy at the time, I'm not sure how many people still have that money in their pockets right now. But
I was hoping to have that and just kind of and sit on it, and mm-hmm. it just, in time, you need to pay bills.
And yeah. I mean, that was the point, right?
Yep.
That was why they put that out there, because there were so many people that put out of work, and still, I mean, with the latest job numbers, I believe there's 29 million people on unemployment, and unemployment has dropped. I think it's right around 8 or 9% nationwide now, but still folks struggling week to week to pay rent and keep food on the table. So, you know, in a way, and it's a tough battle as a conservative, as a fiscal conservative, because you look at the amount of money that the federal government has printed, not only over this last 8 months because of the pandemic, but even before that. They just keep adding money and adding money, and we're so many trillions of dollars in debt now that you want to balance it, right? You want to say, the perfect world would be government would just quit spending money. We'd mm-hmm. start to pay back that debt and get a little bit lower and get in a better financial situation. But with so many citizens struggling day to day, you know that they need help. And so this battle, I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. The Democrats are now arguing that it's the Republicans' fault they're not able to move on this new stimulus bill. Republicans are saying it's the Democrats' fault, specifically Nancy Pelosi, who we've heard a number of congressmen and senators say she just refuses at this point to come to the table and negotiate further.
They've circled her and her new hairstyle. That she's the one.
Yes.
Basically what they're saying.
Exactly. And yesterday, Congressman Bradley Byrne was on with Sean Sullivan, and he talked about Pelosi not coming to the negotiating table.
I don't see any coronavirus bill getting done between now and the election. Now, I think she's doing this deliberately. I said this on your show before.
Yep.
I think she thinks it's in her benefit not to have a bill between now and the election.
Now, Congressman Byrne is not the only politician who has said they don't think we'll get a bill before the November election. I know that Jeff Poor yesterday spoke with Congressman Mike Rogers, who I believe said the same thing, that they don't think there's going to be anything that gets done. And then you look at our most senior senator for Alabama, Richard Shelby, who is the chair of the Appropriations Committee, which is pretty vital in instances like this. He said he doesn't think that relief will come until after the November election. He was asked by reporters. He said, "It looks that way. You never know around here. Sometimes things look bleak and they're revived and so forth." But the bill that was put out there by Republicans in the Senate yesterday has a price tag of $500 billion. Democrats call that inadequate. And I believe when they started negotiating these most recent rounds, it feels like it was a couple months ago. I'm not sure exactly when they started, but you had the Democrats put out the Heroes Act, and the Republicans put out the HEALS mm-hmm. Act. I think the Democrats was coming in, their price tag was right around $4
trillion. It was.
And if I remember correctly, the Republicans initially were putting out a bill right around $1 or $2 trillion. So that's...
Yeah, it was between 1 and 2, which, you know, is mind-blowing. And they were still... $2 to $2.5 trillion apart.
Yeah,
trillion apart in trying to come to some sort of consensus. Crazy.
Yeah, and the Republicans since dropped that down to a $500 billion bill, which would put some money into businesses that would not include that $1,200 per person stimulus check that we all received initially. But the Democrats, on the other hand, they want to send out those checks and add even more money and add more money to the unemployment that's offered by the federal government. Now, during all these negotiations, just a couple weeks ago, President Donald Trump made an executive order where he extended the federal unemployment money, but he dropped it from the $600 in additional money that was going to states to $300, and ask that the state supply an extra $100.
Yeah.
And I think since that first bill ran out at the end of July, that federal unemployment money, Alabama last week began repaying for the month of August for the people that were on unemployment an extra $300 in their wallets. So this thing is going nowhere, it appears, and I had some high hopes, at least at the beginning of this week, as everyone else was saying, yeah, it looks like it's going to die right there in Senate and they won't be able to negotiate. That just seems so unbelievable to me that they can't figure something out in this pandemic in the meantime to keep regular citizens, you know, blue-collar workers, people struggling day-to-day, help keep money on their table, business owners who are likely to lose their business because of the rules that have been in place by state governments and federal governments where they can't have 100% occupancy.
You know who I was thinking about when you were talking about all that, too, is the fact that there is an art walk downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one little corner of town, obviously, but it's a vital area of town, because when it's doing well, it's a great engine for the city in so many ways. And those businesses that took their chances to put a business on Dolphin Street, on Government, on one of the side streets, you know, they probably took everything they had to dump it into these businesses and give themselves a chance to have a successful business. Many had a successful business
mm-hmm.
until this hit. So if you get down to Art Walk today, have some conversations with these folks. Take, you know, go ahead and walk inside these stores and shops and make some purchases and just see how they're doing.
Yeah, and while the government isn't helping us a whole lot much more right now, and you know, the president, he even mentioned earlier this week, maybe we take the $300 billion from the last bill that's unspent to this point and use that to send stimulus checks out to folks. Well, until that happens, I encourage you, and we've been encouraging for months, go out and shop at some of these local businesses.
Absolutely.
If you can. If you don't have any extra health worries, you might be worried about coronavirus. If you're not, you know, buy food. Go out to restaurants in a safe manner and order in if you can't do that, because these local businesses are our local economy. They got to keep them afloat. They're neighbors.
They really are. And, you know, I don't think we talked about this earlier this week, and I'm really proud of this. I don't think there's any media source, certainly radio station, in this market that caters to and props up local business like FM Talk 106.5 because, oh, guess what? We're a local business.
Yeah.
We get it completely, right?
Nah, not just advertisers, but friends.
You got it.
FM Talk.
You got it. 8:46 FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. We'll talk a little bit about how to safely go to the restaurants and maybe also turn up your voice at 343-0106. Yep, for FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig in Mobile Mornings. And you want to know what's going on around here? Well, here, the blank we are, because we got it. We
got
have
it.
Dalton and I from 6 to 9, Jeff Poore, great show on Alabama politics, great connections, and really smart points of view from Jeff and his guests. And also, you've got Sean Sullivan, who has some really great conversations on Midday Mobile yesterday. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and we'll be coming to the phones here in just a second, but coming up on the Jeff Poore Show today, in the first hour, 9 o'clock hour, he talks with Jeff Dunn, the commissioner of the Alabama Department of Corrections. So they're talking prisons there and Ivy's new prison plan. And then former U.S. Representative Parker Griffith, the former congressman there, joining in the 10 o'clock hour. Also, April Marie Fogle from Alabama Today and the weekly guest, State Senator Chris Elliott, will be joining Jeff there in the 11 o'clock hour. So you don't want to miss any of those great interviews.
George is from Mobile, and I believe wants to talk about schools. George, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great.
Yeah, I just want, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I'm having a little issue on my end hearing y'all, but anyway, I just wanted to make a quick comment, make people aware. I know that they said that they're going to implement letting the students come back into the schools and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that parents need to understand in this, they maybe have not read the memo or whatever else, but when the kids come back, and I know particularly for the middle school and the high school kids, they will still be doing the online learning.
Really?
And so, yeah, that's one point that people do not understand. They will not be getting necessarily the same learning that they would have gotten from in-person teaching. The way I understand it, and this has been written out, because you're going to have some people that do come back and some people that don't, they have made a decision that they're going to stay with the Schoology program. And the kids, at least in the high school and middle school levels, are being told to bring their devices to school, and the teacher will still be at the front of the room. She will be socially distant, but she will be teaching to her screen, and the kids will be sitting in the room learning from their screen.
What?
So it's really not going to be a lot different from them living at home. And in that sense, some parents have started to say, well, if your kid is not struggling with the online service,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there may not be a reason to send them to school.
Right. And they're not struggling to keep them.
Yeah,
and they're not struggling to make sure that they're, you know, I mean, daycare and that kind of thing, because that's one of the concerns.
Right.
My parents would be
right.
for getting the kids back in school. What was the expense?
Now, here's a secondary part of that, and I know this because my wife's a teacher.
Okay.
These classes were not sized down. Actually, in some cases, they were sized up, thinking that this online learning was going to be the first part of the year, and because of that, they went ahead and front-loaded a lot of these classes. So in the case of my wife, you know, you have huge numbers
mm-hmm.
in these classes. And they're like, okay, well, what happens if all of them decide to come back?
Mm. There won't be enough room. It's certainly not enough room for social
right.
distancing.
Yeah.
Well, that's insane.
So anyway, like I said, I just wanted to put that out there.
No, thank you.
Like, it's something for the parents to think about.
Yes.
You know, I know the immediate reaction might be, you know, hey, the schools are back open. Let's send everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you
Interesting.
Know.
And the other thing, George, is I saw the announcement that the school system said, oh, the kids can keep the
Chromebooks and things
books,
like that. Yeah.
They have no choice. If they're not doing them a big favor, they need to keep their Chromebooks because that's the way they're going to continue to learn, obviously. George, thanks for the call.
Well, okay, go ahead.
You got it.
And a couple texts backing George up on that call here. Haywood says, George speaks truth. They stay in the homeroom all day. Same with the lower grades. So I guess no moving from classroom to classroom from whatever you call it, first period, second period,
yep.
whatever.
Right.
And then Jace, caller, 100% correct. My senior asked yesterday if she can not go back October 5th, as it makes zero difference. And then Greg says that's true about the students. Multiple teachers' friends are losing their minds because of this. So doesn't seem like it'll be the smooth transition that at least I envisioned when this news story came out. And it makes sense that the teachers would still be doing the online thing
yeah.
for students that do decide to remain remote at home.
Let's see what that percentage is going to be.
What yeah. I don't understand, what doesn't make sense from that call is if you do go back to the classroom,
yeah.
that you still need to be watching your screen there in front of you instead of... So I guess you'll go into homeroom, the way I understand this, and throughout the day you'll just be learning virtually as you sit there in the homeroom class.
Yeah.
And then like you said, they made the classes bigger in order to... Because if everyone was learning remotely, it didn't matter if it was 10 people in one class or 7,000 people in one class.
Now it's going to matter.
But when you bring students back, then that becomes a major issue. That's a great call. I really appreciate him bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, 856. I know it's something you wanted to bring to my attention.
Yeah, I have got to tell you this story. And as we wrap up Mobile Mornings, on Fridays, we try to do something a little bit light at
sure.
the end of the show. And so I couldn't believe when I read this story. So, you know, SEC football is getting ready to get cranked back up here at the end of the month, September 26th.
Right.
And they are actually, most stadiums are going to allow fans to attend the games.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium at Ole Miss, they're going to have 25% capacity, and you got 64,000 people that normally fit in there. So around 16,000 people will be attending the first game when Ole Miss hosts Florida. So they're still selling concessions, right? And I don't know if you've gotten souvenir cups for any games you've ever gone to.
I have.
They have, you know, players on the cups or past members of the team. So this year, Ole Miss was trying to do something a little different and honor healthcare workers. And they put pictures of healthcare workers on these souvenir cups that you get at the station, at the stadium. Well, apparently they didn't look deeply enough into some of these pictures that they gathered of quote-unquote healthcare workers.
And?
Must have done a Google search image. And accidentally,
oh,
it appears,
good.
They accidentally put an adult film star dressed as a doctor.
Oh.
An adult film star dressed as a doctor. His name, Johnny Sins. He made his way onto one of these Ole Miss honoring healthcare workers cups that they were going to be selling at the stadium at the end of this month. So they must have done like a Google search and searched healthcare workers and took every image they could.
And Johnny came up.
And Johnny Sins ends up on one of the Ole Miss souvenir cups that were meant to honor healthcare workers. Of course, the internet figured that one out pretty quickly and released that information to the world. So I'm not sure if they're going to pull all of those cups off the shelves, but that one made it past the crack staff there at Ole Miss.
Okay, Johnny, in this scene, you're a doctor. Johnny's like, yeah, whatever, man. You know, I've been plumbers, doctors, not a big deal. So in this scene, Johnny, you're a doctor.
Yeah.
And that's how that conversation started off. And now Johnny is at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium.
Yeah, and if you thought those were going to be popular souvenir cups to begin with. If someone is able to get one of those cups, that's something you'll want to hold on to forever, because that is a story right there.
I don't know if I should say this or not about Johnny's reply to the fact that in this scene he's a doctor. First month on the air, I'm going to let it go. I'll just tell you later, Dalton.
Think about it over the weekend. Maybe we'll see it on Monday.
It is FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. And we've got Jeff Poore on the way in just about 7 minutes.